name is Kirsten Ladderick. I'm a pastor with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and I live in Madagascar. I live in Madagascar because I work with a program called YAGLM, which stands for Young Adults in Global Mission. It's a program for young adults aged 21 through 29 to live and serve in a foreign land. Welcome. And yeah, it's not just in Madagascar. There's actually eight other countries in which that program exists. If you or know somebody who you know is interested, or you want to help someone to be interested in that program, I would be more than happy to talk more about that after or at any point while we're in the village together. I've been in Madagascar now for 4 years in March, and I've learned a lot while I've been there. But I don't have everything figured out, but I'm going to share some of the things I've learned today with you. Our topic is Madagascar, a living faith. I want to talk about something called the Fifuwazana, or what they also refer to as the revival that lives amongst the Malagasy Lutheran Church, the Reformed Church, and some of the Catholics, though not too many of them. It's kind of an ecumenical movement that's not, it's within the church, but not governed by the church. It's kind of fluid, it's kind of interesting. So let's talk about it a little bit. I'm going to put on my lovely, we'll call this is a lamba. Lamba is fabric, lamba is a piece of clothing. You could have a table lamba or a clothing lamba. And this is from one of the Fifuwazana events. And since I'm a woman, and I'm talking about things church-related in Madagascar, you need to put a skirt on. Always. Right? So that's one of the things I get to do. Right? We don't mind. Sometimes it's really convenient because I could show up just like I did now in funny pants and put a skirt on and be all right. Though I don't do that very often. And because I'm part of the Fifuwazana, I would not do it with a cashmere scarf, but I neglected to bring another piece. A man or a woman, and men can wear these too, these lamba pieces. It's not just women, even though women have to wear a skirt for that. But this is very Malagasy to just cover oneself, often for warmth and other reasons. I'm not going to do that today because it's a little warm for me. But I will stay in the skirt, and I'll show you pieces of it, some of what's printed on it as we go along. So the Fifuwazana, this is church. Lots of people go to church in Madagascar. Talked yesterday, 4 million Lutherans in a country of 25,000. Church service, 3 hours. 4 hours, 6 hours, depending on where you're at. When I got to Madagascar, I kept hearing about this revival movement. It was just so important, and I didn't quite understand it, and I was actually a little bit uncertain about it, because it had an event that was part of it that looked, well, we'll get there in a second. It looks like this. As it's understood in Madagascar. Yeah, it's a very important part of this, of the revival movement, and I would say that's what is one of the linchpins or one of the pieces that keeps it real, alive, and functioning. But I didn't know what to do with that, to be honest. Because it's, we'll talk about the actual exorcism and how it comes together further in today. But as it's kind of jarring, just imagine that happening right around you. and those movements of that arm, some of them were soft, some of them feels more violent. Sometimes you're close, sometimes you're far away. I've been close enough to people to feel the wind of those arms, but it's not, you don't touch. It's not meant to hit, it's meant to, what is an exorcism? Get rid of the
spirits,
the devil, the demons. Be gone. Intentionally, be gone. You are not welcome here.
Would you prefer us to have questions?
What's that?
Would you prefer us to not have questions?
Oh my gosh.
Questions or what?
Questions as they come are the best.
So, before Christianity came to Madagascar, was their faith spirit-based?
Yes, ancestral beliefs. Yes.
So is this some hangover to a successful transition from that to a single Godhead that they drive the spirits away? And are, these are all ladies. Are they the people who administer the...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, no. First question, yes and no.
Okay.
And let's kind of leave that there, because okay. That will unfold as we talk. A better, more clear answer to the question. And the revival movement, yes, is probably 80% women. Okay.
So is this is this a once a year ritual? Is this part of the weekly Sunday service? When is this happening?
Yeah, well, the first time I experienced was just at a regular Sunday service. And that was what was most like, wow. In most churches, this will happen once a month in Sunday service. This particular event is taken from an annual event. Again, which we'll talk more about as we go through. But yeah.
So is that directed at one person, or is it more of a communal get rid of the demons from everybody? I mean, I don't see.
Yeah, it's everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah. So if you are in there and you do not want to be part of this or have any of this energy directed at you, you probably have to leave. So, level field, at least as far as the kind of question goes.
So they look like nuns, or is this just part of the dress for the ritual itself?
There are actually four different camps, if you will, of the revival movement. This is one particular camp where they read scripture to say that women should have their heads covered, which is true, it is in scripture, right? So they wear them. But don't get too upset, because there's another camp, the very original one, where the men are the ones who cover their heads, but then the women do not. So there's many ways of interpreting, and there's other camps that don't bother to cover their hair, head, men or women. But yes, this is the particular outfit of this camp. And these people are referred to as, we call them Pianji. What does Pianji mean? Any ideas? Shepherd. Okay. So. Anyway, so I kind of started doing my own like research on this, because I kept hearing about, I was at these revivals because I go to church. I was hearing people tell stories about the Fikuwasana and how they felt called to be shepherds and how the prophet of the movement had directed their vision. What? So I had to take a little look and see if I could figure out something about it. So, yeah, let's just talk a little, go back to the beginning-ish, maybe. So Christianity came into Madagascar from about 1820s and on. This is the very first church building in Madagascar, and actually the very first stone building in Madagascar. It was built in the 1830s, I think. I can't remember specifically. They used to not build with stone because stone was dead. And just build with wood and mud. Yeah, so around then, I told you, we talked yesterday that there was sort of tumultuousness about, for those of you who are with us, about where missionaries were and were not welcomed. The conversion to Christianity was and was not welcome, depending on who was the queen or the king at the time. So we had kings and queens. And that tall building, we showed this yesterday as well, the Rupa, is the queen's palace. And this church here is a church that denotes where that last picture was, one of the places where that last picture was happening, where Christians were sent over the cliff to their death. But as time went on, royalty aligned themselves with Christianity as they aligned themselves with the West in many ways. And there was this one man, we just call him Dada. That's how he's referred to, Dada. So Dada was at one point, and those not as the years that he was doing the work of the people was not his life year. He didn't age super quickly. he used to work in the royal with the royals. He did education. He was the charms keeper. He had done all of these pieces, and then the. And that's what he actually believed. He had his ancestral beliefs, his traditional beliefs. And then the family, the royals, turned to Christianity. And so he put that away. These are many years leading up to the dates that are here. So he put his charms away and he followed submissively into Christianity. And just did what basically what the master said to do and follow the faith of the leaders. And the kings and the queens were Malagasy themselves. At one point, he finally left that work in the court. His son actually replaced him in that. And he went back into a place, the Betsleo area, which is in the highlands of Madagascar, and went back to what he knew, his charms. So as story is told, He got really sick and had a very severe decline in health and financial wherewithal, and just all his life was in turmoil. And Jesus came to him to tell him to follow, to preach the gospel, to build the community, and to live as one. And so that was his, like, Paul, a conversion experience. And these are the stories as they're told to me, right? And now I'm sharing them with you. So he started the revival movement. He started it around the same time that the country was in shambles. There was a lot of problems financially, so he wasn't just sick himself, but there was a macro sickness going on in the country. There's still a slavery happening, there's extreme taxation, the French were coming in, all sorts of things were falling apart. And in that, he rose to start this new movement, the People Asna, which would center around preaching the gospel, evangelizing to his countrymen, hospitality, caring for the sick and the poor, and for community development. I'll skip to this. Within this, he created a way of life for his people and his followers. I'm going to read you these seven commitments that they had. So, and their commitments were not just about Christian and Christian faith, but about health and wholeness and community. Caring for the sick and the needy is a very important part of the Puasana still to this day. And I think that's actually the centerpiece that makes it so interesting and so strong. So within these seven commitments, they were to learn to read and to write. They needed to learn how to count and to calculate. Then they had some things about how you cared for yourself. Women had to comb their hair correctly, and men had to cut theirs. You had to present a good image for the Christians. They talked about practices of cleaning their house on a regular basis, so the sanitary, you know, bringing up the standard that was actually a problem with all of the sickness that was throughout the country at this time. So not just the house, but the yards and the separation of animals from the living quarters. They talked about the fifth commitment was about growing sufficient rice, growing sufficient vegetables, not only so that they could have, but so that they could receive people at any time. The sixth commitment was to always start any event with a blessing or a prayer. So today I already blew it. I didn't bless you, I didn't pray. And the seventh was that where Christians died, that they should be buried. And we talked yesterday about the family tombs and how that's kind of an important piece, that they were trying to kind of make a shift in that realm. The Tubies are really interesting places. And Tubi, yeah, we have French vowels, how we say things. They are the places that care for the people who are physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, unloved, unwhole at any time. The movement camps are the places where, like, the big head of all of these. So Tubies, up to this day, this was just the starting of them in this one part of the country. Tubies are all over the island. All over the island. I've been to so many I can't even count. And I've had place volunteers working in and amongst and tangentially with them for all the time that I've been there. And the movement camps are like kind of like the camp headquarters. So like if Holden was sending out all these people, this would be the movement camp in the center, place we all were. And then their way of life, we talked about that a little bit, about the clothing. But the clothing, what I was showing you, was getting away from the Western clothing that the missionaries had brought as part of Christianity. So we're starting to get to answer your question about how, you know, they heard the gospel from the missionaries and incorporated it into their own understanding and their own use. And that is what the Kifuwasna is all about. Is everyone tracking with me so far? We've got lots more to talk about. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't want to ask a question, but a thing you told me lunchtime, which really surprised me, was the size of Madagascar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it's about the size of Texas.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's me. With a couple of women who are PRMGs at the what is called the Nini Lava or Antaramalaza to me. So he started this movement, Dada started this movement, but he couldn't just facilitate all of these wonderful things. You know, you need workers in the fields, right? To care for the sick, care for the needy, feed the people that are coming. So they created what they call shepherds. At this point, shepherds are trained for 2 years in theology and preaching and hospitality and care. And then they work. This is not actually, though, a profession. They do it as a profession, but they study for 2 years and there's no guarantee of income. There's no guarantee of payments. They just go to one of these, they either work at a Tubi or they work at the movement camp. And some people will work as a shepherd. They wouldn't say part-time, but kind of basically part-time. Maybe do some other secular work and also work as shepherds. So the shepherds do different work. Now, not all of them are casting demons. Some of them are. Some of them are preaching. Some of them are teaching. Some of them are doing the hard work of just caring for individuals that come to these camps. I'll show you a little bit of some pictures about one particular camp that I am very familiar with. So earlier, it said, so Dada, he's considered a prophet of the movement, and he is the founding prophet. Currently, there is no living prophet in Madagascar amongst the people as now. And there hasn't always been, but there have been prophets who've arisen and then gone away for whatever reason, usually through death, as Dada did. There was a prophet in 47 who came up and in a year walked away from his call of prophecy because the people were worshiping him and not God and not Jesus. Later on, there was a new prophet who came. She kind of came around the same time, Ninilava. And she just goes by, as we say, Ninilava. Nini is mother. Lava is tall or big. And this woman's like about 6'2". And I don't know if you notice those women that were standing next to me in that picture? They weren't exceptionally short. Malagasy people are just kind of short. So Ninilava to be, you know, that's a tall woman. So she had quite the stature. So Ninilava rose up as a prophet in the southeast of the island. I'm going to talk about her a little bit through the camp that is made or part of her. Yeah, I'm wearing this thing. This is from, pardon me, I'll let you see it kind of more. This is actually from one of the annual events of the Thikawasna, you can kind of see. Over here, that is actually what the church up there looks like, although it looks like a much more Western rendering than it actually is. And the houses that are kind of caricatured, but that actually is kind of how people live, their type of housing in that area. But one of these is made for every year, come to Jesus and live. It's kind of the theme that went on this year, or the 2016, which was the, if you'll notice, then the 75th year celebration of Ninilava and the ministry and the work that she had done. So I was in a place called Ankara Malaza, and that is just in the southeast of the country. From the capital city, where anyone would fly into, or where I live, it takes a good hard day of driving, plus some more the next day. Then you leave the blacktop and you go on a dirt road, which is in a variety of levels of condition. That may be only an hour, or maybe 3 hours, depending on the year, until you finally get to a place where you have to leave your car behind and get in a boat and go across the journey. So it's like a pilgrimage just to even visit this place. I love it because you get this, I feel like it's almost like kind of mystical, magical, like it just sort of appears out of nowhere and you've done all this long trip. There's actually about 2,500 people who live in this village, which is a movement camp, which has its own tubi. But it swells a great deal once a year as we celebrate the ministry of the tubi and of Ninilava. So the streets get packed, and often it swells to 25,000 people, in this place. So you can imagine it's wonderful and gross and all sorts of things. It doesn't have adequate sanitation, it doesn't have adequate clean food, it doesn't have adequate anything, but I'll tell you, it's wonderful. I wouldn't be anywhere else when I can be there. We crowd in, everyone. These are like people, like the head of the church and one of their kids. But so no one gets prime seating. We did, because there's too many of us to fit into this place. So that's taking a picture from back there. So the annual celebration goes for a week. A week of the first bell going off around 3:30 and the first worship starting at 4. That was a.m. Sorry. The second one around 8. Well, you know, time out, because around 7 we've got to eat some breakfast, right? Around 8 we're going to go back into worship. Around noon we'll go for some food. The afternoon, maybe we'll listen to a lecture, maybe we'll worship some more. We have to eat dinner, and we have a night worship if we choose. Not everyone has to be at all these things, but the atmosphere kind of pulls you in and through that. And so this happens every day for days, for that whole week. And on the final day, so August 2nd of every year at this place, they have the culminating event, which is consecrating even more of these shepherds. So in a church of 4 million people, we said that, a church of 1,500 pastors, male pastors, they consecrate up to 2,000 of these Pianges every year. 1,000 to 2,000 who aren't getting paid, they're just doing the work. Right now there's currently about 46,000 Pianges. I just kind of get chills even like thinking about that level of commitment.
But no ordained women, right?
What's that?
No ordained women.
There are no ordained women. No.
Do the Yagans get a chance to go to this event?
So they will never be at this particular one because it's in between their year. But this last year, the last group, and I hope this group is coming, this group, there's Fadri Mayana, has their similar situation, which ends August 26th. And so it's one of the first things that they see and are overwhelmed by. And it's awesome. And they're crazy, because do you know the president of the country will come? The president of the country. I have shaken hands with the president of the country multiple times. They will be at this thing, but they always fly in by helicopter, so it's this crazy. It's like a crazy, like, these people are totally sworn to poverty and service, and in whisks the president. But yet at the same time, there's no question that it is that important to be there, or it's understood to be that important to be here. And it said that Ninilawa offered counsel to most of the leadership of the country through the 80s and the 90s. So it's something pretty important. So what she brought into kind of the mix of things and her way of, and we just call her Mama, that's it. Like people, Ninilawa is like sort of formal, even though it's still not her name, right? The tall woman. But when you talk to people who knew her, who were given a vision of what their life was for her, it's always Mama. So Mama said, I am here for you. I am here as a leader and maybe a conduit. Never saw herself as somebody that is, say the stories, I didn't know her personally, that she never saw herself as the one to be worshipped, but the one to point, always to pointing to Jesus. So for that, in her like coming to be, would always be, you must, or when she would come to visit, you must first proclaim the gospel, then you cast the demons and the laying of hands, and then finally, spiritual care through conversation, but never in any other order. And it said that she would stay up all night to make sure the adequate spiritual care was given. but never before the primary purpose of proclaiming the gospel and making people whole. Because that's actually what casting the demons and laying the pain is for. In my assessment and understanding of what she did. So Nini Lava lays buried right behind the church at Nkandwas. If you're to visit there, one of the first things that happens is your feet are washed, sign of hospitality, sign of love and care. So I know it's pretty dirty there too. Okay. While you're there at these events, you just meet people too. I wasn't at four worship services every day. I know there were people who were at four worship services every day. I was at multiple ones every day. But you get to kind of work and live and be in community and just have conversations with people. The woman in the blue standing next to me was an international judge in her career, recently retired. And these two women told me all their stories about knowing Mama. You know, Mama always said that actually women should be ordained. And somehow that's not an interesting memory of Mama for everyone right now. And many other very fascinating stories. So, yeah. So the work of the shepherds of the Pianji, those are a couple of the Pianji that actually live at the village, and you can see they have the same kind of different colors and stuff, the same idea of a wrap that I've got on right now. So the work, actually, when they talk about the work of Pianji, is actually, they are talking about exorcism and prayer, that's the work, up above anything else. We're going to exercise and we're going to pray. I think I got my slides out of order. Sorry about this. Yeah, there we go, let's go to this one. So this will happen not just at the big events, but in church. It's a regular Sunday service with all the Pianjis gathered around the congregation. And what they would do to start is they would read scripture, scriptural basis for what they're doing. So everything is scripturally based. And I'm going to read you actually the four pieces of scripture right now. We'll put them on the screen. And after they read the scriptures, someone will preach a little sermon, someone will pray, and then they will cast the demon. So they will read from John 14. Very truly, I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father. I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it. If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him or her because she resides in you and she will be in you. As these are being read, everyone would just be in front of the congregation with the appropriately dressed, a visual reminder of what is most important in hand. They would continue with Mark, chapter 16. And he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the good news to the whole creation. The one who believes and is baptized will be saved, but the one who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. By using my name, they will cast out demons, they will speak in tongues, they will pick up snakes in their hands, and if they drink anything deadly, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover. So then the Lord Jesus, after he had spoken to them, was taken up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of the Father. And they went out and proclaimed the good news everywhere. Well, the Lord worked with them and confirmed the message by the signs that accompanied it. We read from Matthew chapter 18. Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I truly tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three of you are gathered in my name, I am there among them. And finally, from John 20, Jesus said to them again, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you. When he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. Every single time, there is not an exorcism done without the reading of all of those scriptures. And it's been like that since the beginning of the movement. These were selected by the original founder, Dada, that we talked about earlier. And then, as we looked at before, would start the act of taking those gospel texts at their word. What I see anymore, and think of anymore, when I'm amidst this setting, is actually not fear that started me, not question, although maybe a little question. But I think in terms now of love. And I think in terms of love because these people do this because they believe that something can happen. They believe that what God commanded in these scriptures that we read is real, and that they're not going to just sit back and wonder if anything could change. But they're going to go and do the work, as they call it, that they understand to work.
What's the children's reaction to this? And you can see some of them sitting there.
So after the exorcism, I'll get to that in a second. After the exorcism, everything calms down. And sometimes these can get really loud. You know, I could have actually turned the volume up to give you more of a sense of that. After the exorcism, everyone who wants, no one is required, but everyone who wants to be prayed for with the laying of hands has that opportunity to do that. And this can go on for a long time. A long time. And I see a ton of children going up for the prayers. Depending on who I talk to of the Pianji, I have a different interpretation of what people are praying for or how they're being prayed over. But I know when I have gone up to be prayed for myself, I have been asked, would you like a prayer? Did you come here for a prayer of blessing? I'll take that. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, I see love and I see compassion. And I see people that put their belief in this over all other ways of healing in their country. Partly because their medical system is horrible, partly because mental health systems and availability is virtually non-existent. But also because they just believe it to be the way you're supposed to be. God said to welcome the stranger. God said to clothe the naked, heal the sick, and feed the hungry. And so this is what we, this is how we do it. Yeah. Yeah, sir.
So with what medical system there is there, do they embrace this or do they kind of fight against it?
This meaning the medical system or?
Yeah, I mean, so the medical community that is there, do they embrace this sort of feeling? Or do they say, yeah, you can do this, but now you better come see us?
Yeah, people really believe that this this will work, and people see and experience that it does.
Mm-hmm. And so even the doctors and the...
Right, okay. Right. Depending, you know, and different... I am not a doctor, and I'm not... haven't studied this at length. I'm talking about my experience and my conversations and my attempts to understand. But there are many places, in fact, in Tana, the capital city where I live. So this is the Nini Baba's movement camp that has a 2B here. But she also has a pretty significant 2B in just outside of Antananarivo. And right next to that is the big Lutheran church and the 2B. And the hospital, the Lutheran hospital. So like everything is
all three are here.
All connected. Yeah, there's not going to be a 2B that does not have a church. And the church will often be right in the center, you know, not unintentional, but it's put right in the center of the place. Yeah. So, yeah, other questions? Reactions?
What is your position, Nina? Are you a pastor over there? What are you?
In the eyes of the Malagasy, I am a pastor, yes. It depends where I go. It depends who I run into and what the circumstance is. One of the reasons I'm really interested in the Fipuwasna, the revival movement, is I am most free to be a pastor there. You know, women's leadership, you know, is not questioned. Nini Laba is like, there's not a single leader in the Malagasy Lutheran Church. When I say leader, like the top level of leadership at the front office and at the various synods that I have met, and I've met many of them, who doesn't have a story about how Nini Laba directed their lives. Whether it was what their future career should be, how they should study, who they should marry. And they recount those stories with such pride that they have this intimate connection with Nini Laba.
What drew you to Madagascar?
I was really interested in the Yaga program. And I had spent time in India and South Africa and had understood Madagascar to maybe be some, have elements of those different cultures, and it does.
Where are you from?
I am from, originally, I was made in Detroit. Why I'm wearing this? This is not astronomy here. but before I went to Madagascar, I was pastoring in Stockton, California.
So I don't understand, these 2Bs are connected with churches?
It's like a loose affiliation. Oh. So like at a 2B, you'll have Lutherans or you'll have Reforms from the Reformed Church and the Lutheran Church, but they're always connected to a church, or there'll always be like a church within.
In all different denominations.
In all of those two denominations.
Okay.
So there aren't as much, like the Catholics aren't as much into this movement and whatnot.
Did you need an interpreter to understand what was happening? Or
at this level of stuff, I always sit with an interpreter. Yeah. But like many people, there'll be people that also speak really great English, and so you can kind of get what's going on from there as well. Yeah. Is this interesting?
Yeah.
It's kind of mind-boggling, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 So I wanted to clarify something for me.
Sure.
So when, you know, after this part of the worship service is done, mm-hmm. do they go into any kind of singing then? Or, I mean, is there anything like that that happens afterwards?
We would pray. We would pray. Because that's how you end. You end everything with prayer.
So there aren't like the singing of hymns or...
They would be, they during the time that people are being exercised, or actually not exercised, in the time of the laying on of hands, yes, the congregation would just be singing and singing and singing, hymn after hymn after hymn. Mm-hmm. So, which is why I think everybody knows every verse of 700 hymns. Because they're always, because, yeah, it takes a long time to do this. They did the same for communion, offering, all those times, which are all very long processes. Yes.
So the same people typically experiencing the exorcisms over and over again each mm-hmm. time they meet?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and because it's going to be a congregation, right, that is going to see that every month, unless you choose to leave or not be part of it that week, but you would be part of that. At the 2Bs and at the movement camps, they will have them multiple times in a week. The 2Bs, that they do understand that as part of their health care, part of how they will help people to be well, to be whole.
Is this equivalent to a Catholic confession?
A Catholic confession? No, I don't know. It's more of a... I haven't thought about someone like that. My first instinct is to say no, but then in a way, I don't know, maybe it is, because we're acknowledging that there's evil in the world. And there might be evil within us. And there probably is evil within us. Right? All of us. Mm-hmm. Good and evil right through the heart of every single one of us. Mm-hmm. So maybe a form of confession, recognizing that we need this. Yeah. Yeah.
So do they associate evil then with disease?
It can be, yes.
And so, if they're in a hospital, I mean, do these shepherds come into the hospital and fix them? You know, I mean, do this exorcism?
I don't know if they actually do like a bedside work that way. And I say that because like hospitals just don't function like our hospitals. To be in a hospital, the doctor and nurse will visit you, but if someone's not caring for you, nothing's going to happen. And I know there's a chance, you can critique some hospital settings in the States, but seriously, no one's going to bring you food. No one's going to give your medicine. No one's going to change your sheets. No one's going to, so like the so it just functions very...
You mean unless you, your own family member is doing that?
Pardon me?
No one's going to bring you food unless it's your own family member.
Correct, correct. Mm-hmm. Or a member of the
hospital.
But the hospital, you know, is not going to provide someone like that. So did we get to the answer of your question?
Yeah, kind of. We've been in Tanzania, mm-hmm. you know, and so there's, you know, we have been singing in Swahili to the people that are in the hospitals, and it seems like it's a real sort of healing sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, the people are the ones that supply them with the food and whatever. They kind of take care of each other in the hospitals. But so I just wondered if it was somewhat similar to that in the hospitals.
Probably.
I mean, it's fascinating, like, anthropologically, culturally, and it's very tempting to think it's quite quaint.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think practices like this in Madagascar have to teach us in the West?
That's a good question.
I think we're going to kind of look at that worship tonight. But what I would say is, I think what they have, what's teaching me, and maybe that's the better thing I would say, or way to answer it, is teaching me is, where's your faith? And I'm not just talking strictly about Jesus or God, but I kind of am because I am a pastor, so I kind of go in that direction. But where is your faith? And do you believe that anything can change? Do you honestly believe that that faith is strong enough to move mountains, to heal, to bring down walls, to affect justice? Do you? Do we? I see nothing but faith in this. Now, and it's not a faith of I have the power, I am queen, or I am all-knowing. But I am part of this. And I can claim the promises, I can claim belief, and stir the waters. I think that's how it's kind of hit me. Yeah.
And if I understood you right there, the process, when you listen to the words translated, they're binding demons, they're casting out demons, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're taking evil seriously. Or they're taking evil seriously. They're making me look and say, evil's real. I think it's one thing in the West, I sense anyway, this is one thing about like living out of country for or even just these 4.5 years. I'm like, what do we think? You know, what's happening in this crazy land of the United States? But I feel like we don't take evil seriously. You know, the idea, yeah, God, the devil in a red suit with a little pitchfork is not real. But I think evil is. I think it's very present. It's very present. But and we have to take that seriously and say no to it. Do what we need to, like, you know, be gone. Be gone. I say no to you because I want to say yes to a better reality. You be gone so joy can come, so peace can come, so healing can come, so love, so unity can rule the day. As opposed to what are ways that we might define evil in our society right now? Children held apart from their parents. What other? Just stop some.
People begging at the exit of the freeway.
People who, so hunger, lack of enough, while many people have more than they know what to do.
People, they died because they didn't have the help. My
lack
neighbor,
of health care.
Yeah.
Lack of resource in all sorts of ways, mm-hmm. Racial injustice, gender injustice, LGBTQ injustice, those are all evil in my book. Absolutely evil. So it's okay to say no. And that's what they do every time. No. Be gone with you. I'm taking this seriously. You, evil, are not welcome in this house.
Well, and even addictions and drug addictions and things to be able to rely on God's strength, mm-hmm. and cast down the impact of the enemy, mm-hmm. against that, to where I can take every thought captive and hold in obedience to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But without that, that constant bombardment of evil, mm-hmm. then there's a struggle there.
Yeah.
Independent of the physical part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is the general health condition of these people? I mean, so many of the countries over there are ravaged with AIDS. One thing, but there's other diseases that they're downed with. But what about what's going on in there with this AIDS thing for these people that have no money, no good health care, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We'll open up a whole new thing. But their AIDS is on the rise, but it's not of the epidemic level that it is in many parts of the world. Bigger issues are malaria and diabetes, and you know, just your basic healthcare things that really should be able to be taken care of so easily. You know, like to go to a Tubi and meet someone with schizophrenia or bipolar, you know, I'm not a medical physician, but things are kind of clear in some of these realities, and you're like, where's the pill? But those aren't available, you know, they're just not there. So many things could be. So I've been to too many funerals of people in their 50s and 60s.
Too many what?
Funerals.
Hmm.
So in fact, the most recent funeral I was at was one of Nini Lava's children. So, and he died at 62. And he was the acting lead of this movement. And that was just 2 months ago. That was, he was someone who was important in my life, a friend of mine as well. We'll see what happens, you know, how that affects the movement. So health gets in the way of how things function, for sure.
What is the fatality level, like for children under 12?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know. There's still, it's not what you'd want it to be, but I don't have a statistic to share with you today. Sorry.
Are there any limits to the Tubi, like how long a person can stay, or is it we will care for you as long as you need care?
Again, I don't know the particulars, but it's just culturally, we're not worried about time. we're more worried about completing things in the time that it needs.
Yeah. How do the other religions kind of mix together with this? Is there Islamic and how does that all fit together? Or
yeah, this is definitely a Christian movement. Right. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, but I mean, so is within the country. I mean, how are things? Is there tension between the?
It depends what part of the country you're in. It's about 42%. Christian, 8% Muslim, 50% ancestral beliefs. There's a couple parts of the country where it's a little dicey between the Christians and the Muslims, but
where would that be?
In the southeast, and some in the northwest. But it's not getting the headlines. It's not a huge issue. And some of it. Yeah, it's happening. Some of the biggest challenges are happening in further out in the bush, where people are just starved for resources. Yes.
So, what's the relationship between the ELCA and the Lutheran Church in Madagascar?
We are considered a partner church to the Malagasy Lutheran Church. So us, along with the Norwegian Mission Society and Dan Mission and a group of French Protestants, are official partners in the work of church in Madagascar.
So do they have a bishop?
They have presidents. And they have senates, but the heads of the senates are, they call them presidents. Wow, I feel like, okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
So the ELCA synods that are, you know, like, that have adopted
companion synod relationships.
Yeah, so what are they doing? I mean, what would be common for them to do, and how is that going?
They all do different things. From a lot to not much, and that's all based on like availability of resources. So Rocky Mountain Synod is the most active synod. They are connected with actually four different synods in the north. And I don't know all the work that they do. I think they're going to come visit again next year in 2020. But one thing that they just kicked off is support for seminary students in Madagascar. So kind of this individual relationship developed support of pastors and theologians coming through that work. So, yeah. It's perfectly timed. It's a little after 5. Thank you so much for listening and considering.